Now turn to part three. You will hear part of an interview in which two scientists called Jessica Conway and Paul Flower are talking about exploration and discovery. For questions 15 to 20, choose the answer A, B, C or D which fits best according to what you hear. You now have 70 seconds to look at part three.
Welcome to today's programme, where I'm talking to scientists Jessica Conway and Paul Flower about exploration and discovery. First of all, Jessica, these days surely everything on Earth has been discovered and mapped?
Absolutely not. We've begun. You can use satellites to estimate the shape of the landscape under the oceans, for example, but it's only an estimate. In the Antarctic recently, investigating undersea volcanoes, we found a crater in the ocean floor about 4 kilometres across and well over 1 kilometre deep. And it wasn't on any map. We had no idea it was there. And that just amazed me, because there's nowhere beyond the shoreline where we can trip over such big geographical features that we don't already know about.
And are you finding many new animal species around these underwater craters?
Well, as we get closer to finding everything out there, it's going to get progressively harder to find new species. But at the moment, there's no sign of the rate of discovery slackening off. The real question is just how many more new species there might be there. At least one new species has been discovered every month over the 35 years we've been exploring deep sea craters. And we've still got plenty left to record.
So you're clearly expecting to make similar geographical finds elsewhere?
Sure. We're going to be exploring these sorts of features and comparing what we find for quite some while. There are still huge unexplored areas, so there'll be lots to focus our minds on in the coming decades, with the aim of all of us across different disciplines building up a kind of jigsaw puzzle of what exists where.
What do you think, Paul?
Well, our different backgrounds make for very different research methods, but the ultimate goal is the same. For example, recent work on glaciers by a US researcher has helped me reevaluate my own data on climate change. In this business, the figures can alter from day to day, and you have to keep on top of it.
Now, Paul, you've actually walked where no one's ever walked before. What's that like?
Yes, every year I go to Greenland, climb new mountains and travel on previously untouched ice caps. There are literally hundreds of these. There's a sense of freedom. I think that's what I get. You're still aware your body is exhausted, and yet by travelling to new areas every time, there's this renewed feeling that this is where I'm meant to be. It's an experience like no other.
What about other people accessing remote areas?
You still see great areas where there are no roads, no villages, no permanent habitation whatsoever, despite the current population explosion and the need for development. I'm obviously keen to explore uncharted territory, but not, of course, with the checklist mentality of the wealthy globetrotter. These days, of course, everyone can go everywhere, it seems.
But surely, in coming generations, the urge to explore will begin to dwindle as these places are visited, catalogued, mapped.
I wouldn't want the next generation thinking, it's all been done before. And besides, I can get it all off the internet, because you can't, you see. You can spend your life looking at a computer with the world's best search engines, but it's nowhere near the same as actually standing there on a mountain top. You can do all the research you like, but when you stand there, it's so intense, so life-giving. It doesn't matter that someone might have been there before, because now you are. And regardless of your standpoint on green issues, I think people will always hold that view.
Now you'll hear part three again.
Welcome to today's programme, where I'm talking to scientists Jessica Conway and Paul Flower about exploration and discovery. First of all, Jessica, these days surely everything on Earth has been discovered and mapped?
Absolutely not. We've begun. You can use satellites to estimate the shape of the landscape under the oceans, for example, but it's only an estimate. In the Antarctic recently, investigating undersea volcanoes, we found a crater in the ocean floor about 4 kilometres across and well over 1 kilometre deep. And it wasn't on any map. We had no idea it was there. And that just amazed me, because there's nowhere beyond the shoreline where we can trip over such big geographical features that we don't already know about.
And are you finding many new animal species around these underwater craters?
Well, as we get closer to finding everything out there, it's going to get progressively harder to find new species. But at the moment, there's no sign of the rate of discovery slackening off. The real question is just how many more new species there might be there. At least one new species has been discovered every month over the 35 years we've been exploring deep sea craters, and we've still got plenty left to record.
So you're clearly expecting to make similar geographical finds elsewhere?
Sure. We're going to be exploring these sorts of features and comparing what we find for quite some while. There are still huge unexplored areas, so there'll be lots to focus our minds on in the coming decades, with the aim of all of us across different disciplines building up a kind of jigsaw puzzle of what exists where.
What do you think, Paul?
Well, our different backgrounds make for very different research methods, but the ultimate goal is the same. For example, recent work on glaciers by a US researcher has helped me reevaluate my own data on climate change. In this business, the figures can alter from day to day, and you have to keep on top of it.
Now, Paul, you've actually walked where no one's ever walked before. What's that like?
Yes, every year I go to Greenland, climb new mountains and travel on previously untouched ice caps. There are literally hundreds of these. There's a sense of freedom. I think that's what I get. You're still aware your body is exhausted, and yet by travelling to new areas every time, there's this renewed feeling that this is where I'm meant to be. It's an experience like no other.
What about other people accessing remote areas?
You still see great areas where there are no roads, no villages, no permanent habitation whatsoever, despite the current population explosion and the need for development. I'm obviously keen to explore uncharted territory, but not, of course, with the checklist mentality of the wealthy globetrotter. These days, of course, everyone can go everywhere, it seems.
But surely, in coming generations, the urge to explore will begin to dwindle as these places are visited, catalogued, mapped.
I wouldn't want the next generation thinking, it's all been done before. And besides, I can get it all off the internet, because you can't, you see. You can spend your life looking at a computer with the world's best search engines, but it's nowhere near the same as actually standing there on a mountain top. You can do all the research you like, but when you stand there, it's so intense, so life-giving. It doesn't matter that someone might have been there before, because now you are. And regardless of your standpoint on green issues, I think people will always hold that view.
That's the end of part 3.